Welcome to this inaugural edition of the Pickens Podcast, featuring some of the leading people in politics, media, and government discussing the new president and his victory over Hillary Clinton. We begin with Boone's in-depth interview with an early supporter, General Michael Flynn, who will be Trump's national security advisor, one of the most powerful White House aides.
General Flynn, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me here. This is great.
You bet. Michael Flynn, you were the senior, you're probably the senior intelligence officer in Iraq and Afghanistan. You saw firsthand the issues our troops and diplomats are facing. If you had the power, what one or two things would you do immediately? I'm talking about in Afghanistan.
In Iraq or Afghanistan, yeah. I would want to know the absolute truth as to what's going on. What is the true ground situation that we have there? Because I don't think
what are we going to do?
Yeah, I think exactly. I mean, it's I want to know ground truth, what's going on, unvarnished, because I think we've had too much painting over of how bad it is in Afghanistan and Iraq. So I would need the unvarnished truth right away.
Well, a person in my role, I mean, mm-hmm. you're an insider and mm-hmm. I'm an outsider, but I'm an interested outsider.
Yep.
So I do kind of follow. But to me, what comes off is that there was never a plan, or if there was a plan, we didn't stick with it.
That's right. That's right. We have not had a strategy that will carry us through victory. Okay. In warfare, you go to war to win. Period. There's no just participating in this endless conflict, which is all we've been doing.
For years.
We're into the 15th year, decade and a half in this never-ending participation in this conflict that nobody even understands. And what we need is a strategy for victory, and we have our military forces have actually never really been beaten on the battlefield. The problem that we're facing in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere against this determined enemy is the ideology that we're facing, and that's where the political dimension of this war has not demonstrated the resolve, the willingness, or the determination. You know, this is not about, you know, love and unity
and
all this other stuff. This is in warfare, you must have determination, you must have resolve, and you must have willingness to commit the kinds of resources that that we're going to have to do to win. When we think about the future and we think about going forward, and it's not just about who the president's going to be for the next 4 years, this is about the future of our country for the remainder of this century. And how can we guarantee our own survival with a country that we believe in and we have that our founding fathers created? And I agree that we're still sort of experimenting in a way, but we have values and principles that we're based on, and we have to protect those. And how we protect those is to make others, you know, depend on us. I want the rest of the world to depend on the United States for leadership and for all these other commodities, because these are things that we can create.
I want to go to your book.
Okay, beautiful, okay. Beautiful.
All right, it's A Field of Fight.
Field of Fight.
Okay, tell me how you named it.
The Field of Fight is the battlefield. And The Field of Fight is out of the story of Homer in the Iliad and the Odyssey. And it's actually a poem. And the Field of Fight is it talks about in the poem that these guys wrote at that time, it talks about the Field of Fight being a place where we have to, you know, there's victory, there's sacrifice, there's commitment, there's resolve, there's determination. And so it was a great way for me to think about it, because the Field of Fight is something that I've been on since I was a little kid. I'm in the middle of nine children, and I've always sort of had to fight for a pair of socks or fight for a ride home or whatever. You know, fighting for everything. So the other aspect of the other subtitle of the book is just as important, and it's how we can win the global war against radical Islam and its allies. And in the book, I describe a couple of things. I talk about my sort of why me as an intelligence officer. How did I become an intelligence officer? And I talk about passions, fears, and beliefs that I have, fears that I have, and that I have grown up with and developed over my career in the military, almost 34 years in the military.
How old are you?
I'm 57 years old today. So I'm 57. And and then I talk about war fighting. War fighting on the modern battlefield. War fighting in the 21st century. And then I describe the allies that of the radical Islamists that we are facing. Because it's not just about the Islamic State in Syria or Iraq or the Republic of Iran and Hezbollah. This is about tyranny and also governments that support tyranny and support radical, you know, this radical idea of radical Islam and its ideology. And like I said, I think earlier, this is this particular threat, this particular enemy. This is a political ideology that masks itself behind a religion. And they have determined that one of our major weaknesses here in this country is, of course, our freedom of religion.
I have a feeling our government keeps downplaying all that. I mean, they act like it's not there.
Right.
That this is a scattered kind of a bunch of people. You don't even know whether they're terrorists or whether it's workplace violence or whether it's just two guys got mad at each other and killed 100 people.
Yeah.
And we've got to, the country has got to get better acquainted.
What we need is we need and I love this phrase, and I think it was my wife that gave it to me, but the phrase is, the truth fears no questions.
Oh, I agree.
And we must not fear telling the truth to the American public, because the American public is pretty damn sharp. That's a smart body of people when they're told the truth.
The deal this week that you saw what the Brits did.
Right, Brexit.
The people did.
Right, they were tired of hearing the same old talking points from and the political correctness that, you know, and they also wanted their country, they wanted their sovereign country back. They felt like it was getting out of control.
We're at the same spot.
We're in the exact same place right now, where we have the American public who is sick and tired. So the way I describe it, Boone, is that the American public has lost faith in the federal government. There is a chasm.
The leadership.
The leadership, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a lack of trust between the leadership of our federal government and the American citizenry. And when that begins to happen, which it has been eroding, that trust has eroded.
Well, you said the American people are smart.
They're very
but
smart.
But they all kind of catch on.
That's right.
In a period
together.
It's because they talk.
Right.
They communicate.
Especially today.
They analyze, and they give their opinions back and forth. That's one of the great things about our country.
Yeah.
And what happens is they kind of come out at the same spot. They're fed up.
They're fed up. They're fed up. I mean, it's the, you know, like my old man used to say, hey, enough is enough. Get the hell out of here and go back to work. I mean, that's what he used to say. You know, enough is enough. I mean, I as an American citizen, I mean, I've been given a lot of grief as a general coming out of the military not too long ago. And I'm being so sort of out there because, hey, when did I stop becoming an American? I mean, I've had it. And I've had it because I've seen our leadership not tell the truth to the American public. And that's very disturbing for me.
Well,
as somebody who's been inside, and now I'm looking at it from the outside.
Well, this in conclusion, I'm going to nominate Michael Flynn to go on the ticket with Donald Trump and change this country, because the people in this country want it to change.
Yeah, they do.
You would be a great asset to Trump on the ticket. So,
well, thanks so much for that.
Sure.
It's just an honor to even be thought about like that. I mean, you know, it, honest to God, if you, you know, we all have our own little stories about growing up. But I mean, when I think about, you know, where I was and as a kid, and I describe some of it in the book, and then to be someone who has their name considered to be the Vice President of the United States of America?
I saw it yesterday on Fox.
Oh, my God.
It's a serious deal.
It's very serious. You know, and I take it very seriously.
You have one thing I would really like to have.
What's that?
57 years old.
Thanks very much. Great.
You bet. I've got Laura Ingram, who has a hot new website, Life Zet.
Yes, sir.
You want to talk about politics?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a crazy 2016 campaign season.
How is this thing going to run out?
Well, I said from the beginning that this idea that the more the merrier, everyone kept saying, oh, the more the merrier. Look at all these Republicans who are in. It's going to be great. And I think 2 years ago, you and I were talking about this, and I said, we need one conservative alternative to whoever the establishment GOP picks ahead of time. And I think we now know that the person that they picked was Jeb Bush. They, you know, all these people sent money to Jeb, and I like him, by the way, very much. He's a great guy. He was a good governor of Florida. But I knew that after the last Bush term and the fact that Jeb hadn't run for office, last time he did, the iPhone hadn't been invented. It was a long time ago. That it was going to be a hard sell. So what happened is all these people got in the race, and yet none of them had that stickiness that you need. Stickiness meaning they really connect with the people. So Jeb has all the money, and none of these other candidates could get much traction. Then Trump comes along, and he sees an opportunity. He sees an opportunity to talk about trade and immigration and jobs from a businessman's perspective. And you and he are very different in personality, but you are a very common sense person. He has a lot of common sense, even though, you know, he has a different style. He's a little more brasher. Like, you're a little more understated common sense. He's more brash. But it's so bad in Washington that people look at Trump and they think, God, that guy seems to kind of make sense. And yeah, he's sometimes a little rough around the edges, but he talks like I talk.
But he's the only one there in that category, while the other category has.
They're vying for the establishment support. They're trying to figure out how to get the 50 richest families in the country to support them, which means they have to contort themselves into all these positions that don't really mesh with the grassroots. So Trump doesn't need that money. And so for now, at least, he can just, he's like the guy at the end of the bar, because this person's stupid and they screwed things up in Washington and I'm going to fix it.
That's his whole pitch. But now, though, I will say this. He went a long time just criticizing.
Yeah.
And he started coming up with a tax plan.
He has an immigration plan out there. I think it's going to be, in the end, very difficult for him to win the nomination, because I think the establishment still has so much power. The Bushes have so much power. And I think we'll see what happens. It's crazy. I would never have predicted, obviously, that Donald. I didn't even think he was going to run. So. But I didn't think he would either.
Because thought he'd talk about it.
Yeah, much like, you know, if people want you to run, you have a lot of business interests. It's a lot to take on if you already have established a whole business brand and that's your life. I mean, it's a lot to transition to. But he saw an opening, and he took that opening.
Do you think he was surprised at what was there?
Maybe not so much. I don't know how surprised he was. I think he knows what he's good at, and he did it. He's good at building a brand. His brand is Make America Great Again.
Yep.
He stuck with that brand.
I think he was surprised that all at once he was.
I haven't talked to him about
that. On
the top
of the heap.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Do you know him?
Oh, I know him. Sure, I know him.
Know him well?
Yeah. Well, like. How well? You mean we run around together, shoot quail together?
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. No, I've known him for a long time. And first time I met him was at Ace Greenberg's 60th birthday party. He was across the table, and I didn't know who he was. I'm not a real estate guy.
So yeah.
It didn't mean, and probably he didn't know who I was either. And so, but it was, I've known him a long time. I talked to him the other day, and we were talking about energy.
Yeah.
Laura, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Great to see you, Boone.
Steve Forbes is no stranger to politics. He ran for president twice. Now, the editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine tells Boone he understands why Americans are looking for a big change.
What's the
message? What the message is, people are deeply disaffected with the political establishment of both parties. They feel the country is adrift. They feel the world is falling apart, which will be underscored by what happened in Paris, that people in charge don't know what they're doing, or if they do know, they don't know how to do it. And so when it's like being on an airplane, if the pilot you feel doesn't know what he's doing, or you're on a ship where the captain doesn't know what's going on, it's pretty scary. So people are attracted to outsiders. You take Donald Trump, no one pays attention to his policy proposals. They like the idea, they know him from TV, they like the idea that he could kick butt, that he tells people off, and by golly, they feel that what needs to be done, shake things up.
I know they want something different than what they've had. They're fed up with that.
Yep.
I do believe the Republican, whoever the nominee is, will beat Hillary.
I think you're right.
I think the American people see Hillary for what Hillary is, which is a person that is not honest. And right. I used to say any politician that's ever found out to be dishonest is dead in the water. Well, I was wrong. But that was 30 years ago. A lot has happened. There's some liars that get away with it.
But I think people are so desirous of change. They know what's happening in the world is profoundly wrong. They know what's happened to the economy is not the American way. It's like 1980. People want a big change.
That was our guy.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
When do we get another one of those guys?
Well, Reagan wasn't Reagan until after he became president.
That's right. I mean, if you go back and look at his resume, it wasn't that impressive. But when he got there, you found out it started to unfold. He moved quickly. Mentally to grasp the enormity of the whole job. And then he he got some support in there to him that could give him a lot of information quick, and he was able to manage it. But that's what a leader is.
Well, that's what Lincoln did. He brought his rivals in, kept them close in to his cabinet. He had enough confidence. I can handle these people. They can contribute. We got to get united. And he did it.
He did it. You said Lincoln. And you have Reagan. These people don't come along very often.
No, but what they do is they set a template so that you don't have to be a Lincoln or a Reagan to see what the principles are. And that's what's starting to percolate again in the Republican Party. What are the principles that make this country great? And that's what's starting to come out. You see it on the tax side, you see it in some of these health proposals, you see it in strong defense.
Something has got to happen, though, Steve. I mean, yes, taxes and strong defense and everything, but we got to get somebody in there that causes it to happen.
Billionaire investor Carl Icahn already had his eye on fixing a few things in Washington when he talked to Boone. Now he's the special advisor to Donald Trump on overhauling regulations.
Carl is, no question, he could be the number one powerful voice in corporate America today.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
You're not going to retire, are you?
No, I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
I wouldn't either.
And I do in so many things, I sort of like it up. You know what I'm really involved in now that's taking up a lot of time is with the government. I don't get involved with government, but there's one thing. You should focus on this. That's a complete total absurdity. Sometimes, in any deal, you say to yourself, it hits you, it's a no-brainer, and that's where you make the money. You know this is real cheap, or this is a great buy. Every once in a while it just hits you. But here in Washington today, there's one thing that's so absurd that, I'm working on trying to get a law with this, and it's close. So today, you have these companies. So we have an economy that's not that stellar, I don't believe. We have economy that the Federal Reserve has been carrying for 3-4 years, zero interest rates, so you have all these bubbles around. So, and then you got a complete gridlock in Congress. But here there should be no gridlock, because here I think everybody I talk to agrees. So they have companies in this country have $2.6 trillion sitting over Europe.
Yeah.
And this is nuts. And they can't take it back because Congress, I'm not even saying give them a holiday, because they said, well, we're waiting for it. We're waiting for overall tax reform. But you don't have to wait. But here's the worst thing. Not only aren't they taking that back, but as we speak, they're planning what they call inversions, where companies are moving out of the country. So we're looking for jobs. You want to have jobs. You're not getting jobs. You're going to lose jobs. Pfizer's moving out now. They're going to be moving out. All they got to do is say to these companies, you know what? You got the money over there. These companies, rightly so, have made all this money.
Well, they pay taxes over there.
They pay tax over there. So why should they pay double tax?
Well, Carl, thanks.
Hey, great seeing you again, Boone. Great seeing you.
Former Senators Trent Lott and Tom Daschle admit Donald Trump's appeal goes beyond party politics.
Your party, have a big change.
Yeah, I think we already have. Maybe we didn't see it coming.
He isn't in place yet, but he's influencing things.
Oh, yeah.
But if he was a president, I've had dinner with Donald Trump.
Sure, I'm sure you have.
And honestly, I mean, when you sit down, you just sit down and say, well, I'm a conservative, I'm a liberal. That's not the way you start dinner. But as you talk around the table and all, I was at Ace Greenberg's home a couple of times, and Donald Trump, five couples for dinner all around the table, and it opens up. You're all, exchanging. Everybody's getting the chance to talk. I would have bet, whatever I had in my pocket, I'd have bet every bit of it that Donald Trump was a Democrat.
Oh, yeah, I think he was.
And I always,
of course,
thought,
he's quick to say so was Reagan at one point. And by the way, I came to Washington in 1968 to work for the Democrat congressman from my hometown.
Well, okay, now.
So, as I learned, I became a Republican. No offense, huh?
I didn't realize I was sitting there with another conservative, and it was Donald Trump.
Was he bombastic that night, or was he?
He always is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen him when he did.
Right.
Enjoy talking, but you enjoy hearing what he has to say.
I had a fundraiser breakfast in New York City, probably in the mid-90s. I don't know, probably 96, 97. Had the breakfast. I sent all the usual list, I guess. He came. And I remember I was surprised he showed up. He showed up and brought a check, he stayed. He hung around and visited.
15 years
I bet
years
you've
ago,
had the same
experience. He was a supporter of mine.
He went both ways, always,
Haley Barbour is the former party leader, governor of Mississippi, and considered one of the leading voices in Republican presidential politics.
And this guy, Trump, he's drawing crowds.
Trump's going to get more votes in the Republican nominating process than any other Republican in history.
So, but he's polling negatively in the general election against her.
That's right. And remember, one thing we forget about, it is very positive that Trump is going to get 12 million or more votes in the nominating contest, the most ever. But you forget, some people do, that it takes about 65 million votes to win. And so getting 12 is historic. But you still got to get another 53 or so in the general election.
Haley, he draws so well. And why is he going to just be very popular and having these big crowds and everything else? And all at once, that's all the people are going to vote for him.
Well, no, I don't think that's all the people are going to vote for him. I think the point is, it takes about 65 million votes to win.
Okay.
Last time we were about 131 million votes cast. So he's got to get about 65 million votes. And the point is, it is very positive he gets these big turnouts and big crowds in the primary. But there are a whole lot of Republicans who don't go to the trouble of voting in the primary, plus the independents and Democrats you have to get. And Donald Trump may be able to do that. And anybody that underestimates, he's been asleep for the last 9 months.
That's right. They all.
And anybody that tells you they saw this coming will lie to you about other things. Because the political the political experts just didn't see this coming. I sure didn't.
Well, it kept the guy say something that I thought was really stupid, and his polls would go up. And I said, there's something strange about this whole thing. But I think he'll beat her.
Americans don't want a third term of Obama.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Pickens Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Boone Pickens and like our podcasts on Audioboom and iTunes. As always, find out more at PickensPlan.com.